Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. Let's get straight to the docket. First, Letitia Stauch. What is this woman doing? Second, the Supreme Court is going to hear a very important case, and it's going to decide whether you have a right to defend yourself. Third, why don't Lori Vallow and Chad DeBille appear at their court appearances? Let's talk about that. Fourth, a woman faced felony charges for not returning a VHS tape. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day and the winner from last week. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. Please hit that subscribe button as well as that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. Tomorrow, 6 p.m. Mountain Time, we will go live. Immediately after that, we will go to our Patreon live program where you can actually call in. We can talk about cases that you want to talk about or, frankly, anything you'd like to talk about because, well, if you're a Patreon, it's your show. All right, let's get to the docket today. First, Letitia Stauch. What is this woman doing? As most people know, if you're a follower here at Crime Talk, you know that Letitia Stauch fired her public defenders so that she can represent her case in the allegations of murder against her 11-year-old stepson, Gannon Stauch. No one should represent themselves in court. It really just is not a good thing to do. It has been said that he who represents himself has a fool for a client. I totally agree with that. One of the reasons that you hire an attorney is for their training and experience, but also for the fact that they're supposed to remove themselves from the emotion of the battle and give you sound legal advice. So Letitia Stauch decided that she was going to represent herself. And of course, what does every pro se defendant need to do if they're going to represent themselves? By God, they're going to do their first case, a first degree murder case. They should probably go to the law library and they need to gain all the knowledge that they possibly can in roughly a year time period that took most people in law school. Obviously, 3 years is the normal course. And then you have years of experience practicing, understanding what are the rules of evidence, tactical things that you learn in other cases over the years so that you can be a zealous advocate for your client. But Letitia Stauch, she knows better. She doesn't need anything. Well, she was signed up to go to the law library at the El Paso County Criminal Justice Center. And that's obviously in Colorado Springs. It's not really close to the courthouse. You got to zig and zag. It's almost like a kind of a quasi-industrial park. It's been years since I've been down there. But like most jails, they have a law library, which usually consists of some books, maybe access to Westlaw, something along those lines, LexisNexis, so that people can look up case law when they really should be reading the rules of evidence and the rules of criminal procedure. But anyway, the sheriff had noticed that Letitia Stauch had signed up to go to the law library and their law library program, but she doesn't want to go. So, as I've said it before, if it's not on paper, it didn't happen. And this particular way, Letitia Stauch cannot claim later that she did not have an opportunity to prepare for her case because she was denied access to the law library. The sheriff's department obviously has dealt with this before. They are covering their bases, and frankly, my hat is off to them. So the sheriff's department usually doesn't get involved in cases at all unless until the court inquires. But in this particular case, the El Paso County Sheriff's Office, through their attorney at the county attorney's office, went out of their way to tell the court that Ms. Stauch had completed and signed up for their law library request form and was provided a copy of the library rules. The law library rules indicate that the inmates don't select the time that they go to the law library. They get told what time they can go to the library because why? It's jail, right? You don't get to do what you want to do. It's no longer like going to Burger King and saying, I'm going to have it my way. It doesn't work that way anymore. So on March 30th, Ms. Stauch refused to go to the law library. And then Ms. Stauch was reminded by the jail personnel that if you refuse to go to the law library, that you will be removed from that list for some 90 days. Well, Ms. Stauch refused to go to the law library. Even better yet, the sheriff's office, at the advice of their attorney, had the officer who was involved in this exchange with Letitia Stauch do an affidavit. And it doesn't read well for Letitia Stauch. In this particular case, a Commander Cy Gillespie was talking to Ms. Stauch and said, hey, you need to take advantage of the law library. Otherwise, your refusal can prevent you from actually going to the law library. And Ms. Stauch repeatedly said to Mr. Cy Gillespie, take me off the library list. And that she didn't need the law library. I told her the refusal would result in suspension from her law library privileges for 90 days. And then it goes on to state that Ms. Stauch stated her reason for refusing to attend during the hours we'd specify for her was because of medical concerns. She was concerned that her drowsiness would interfere with the early morning hours of her law library slots. Now, she was instructed that the medical staff could address her medical concerns to better fit with her assigned law library schedule, but inmate Stauch began to argue about her specific circumstances and asked if I would be expected her to sleep all day. Mr. Gillespie once again said, it's in her best interest to participate in the law library program as a pro se inmate, and that they, being the sheriff's office, could address her medical concerns to work with her law library times. She said, she being Letitia Stauch, said, take me off the list. Okay, this is not going to help Letitia Stauch. Why? Because it's simply going to show that she is not utilizing her time to prepare. What's the good thing about that? There will be no delays. And the court now has a record as to why no delays will be had, because she is the one refusing to cooperate, to accommodate the schedule that's been set, even though the sheriff said, we'll try to work around your medical concerns. Now, it doesn't go into medical concerns in this particular case, because that would be a violation of all the HIPAA laws and things of that nature, but it gives you an idea where we're coming from. I'm not sure Ms. Stauch truly appreciates the gravity of the situation that she is in right now. She is looking at facing the rest of her life in prison. I'm not sure Ms. Stauch appreciates the seriousness of the situation that she finds herself in. She is charged with an offense that can carry her being sent to prison for the rest of her life, i.e. die in prison. She's already done some very poor things by firing competent counsel. She's apparently made no arrangements through her family to hire private counsel, and she is simply spiraling out of control here. Now, maybe she has mental health issues, but we have to remember she's received two competency evaluations, and both doctors, one who was really hired by the defense, said she's competent. So at least we know this case will be making some progress soon. And she can't claim ineffective assistance of counsel when you represent yourself. We'll have to see if the trial will turn into as big a circus as the early pretrial proceedings. We'll wait and see. Next on the docket, the United States Supreme Court has decided to hear a case about whether you all will be able to defend yourself. Over a decade after the Supreme Court ruled that the Second Amendment protects the rights to have a handgun in their home for self-defense, the Supreme Court agreed today to decide whether the Constitution also protects the rights to carry a gun outside the home. All right. So there were some significant cases, the District of Columbia versus Heller, and then the McDonald decision versus the City of Chicago. In both of those cases, individuals challenged the prohibitions put in by the city to possess a handgun. And in those particular cases, specifically the Heller decision, says that the right to defend yourself in your home is a constitutional right. In fact, it is a fundamental right, and that the states cannot take that away from you. Now, the case that's going up, Corlett versus the New York Rifle and Pistol Association, is very similar, but in this particular case, two gentlemen were suing because the application that they submitted for a concealed carry permit was denied because they hadn't shown proper cause, meaning that they didn't have a special need for self-protection. District Court and then the Second Circuit upheld the law. Now, the Supreme Court took it, I'm assuming, not because they want to say that the Second Circuit and the District Court got it correct. I think this is going to be a case where it is going to state that you have an absolute right to be able to have a firearm on your person to protect yourself. Now, some people may think that's crazy. Why would you be able to do that? Well, it's a fundamental right, remember? And when you start getting into fundamental right, there has to be an analysis under what is referred to as a strict scrutiny analysis, because you can't go around just creating laws to get rid of people's fundamental rights. Fundamental rights include the right to travel, privacy, and voting, and obviously all First Amendment rights as well. So the analysis is much different than the mere rationality for any other kind of a statute. If a legislature says, hey, we're going to pass a law, and there's some rationality to this law, it's presumed to be valid. Like I said, it's a lot different when you're talking about fundamental rights. So the Supreme Court has instructed the parties to brief a very narrow question that the challengers had asked them to decide, limiting the issue to whether the state's denial of the individual's application to carry a gun outside the home for self-defense violated the Second Amendment. The district court and the appellate court in the Second Circuit upheld that law. I don't think the Supreme Court is taking this case to tell the Second Circuit that they're right. So obviously we'll wait to see. The decision won't come until late summer, but that is a significant case because it affects everyone's ability to be able to protect themselves. And I've told you before, I like firearms. But as I've also told you, as a criminal defense lawyer, they complicate everything. So you have to be very, very smart about it for sure. Next on the docket, why are Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell not showing up for any of these hearings? Well, let's talk about it. Now, remember, a defendant in a criminal case has a Sixth Amendment right to be represented by counsel during every phase of litigation that follows the initiation of formal adversarial proceedings, right? So once basically you're arrested and charges are filed, you have a right to counsel, at least dictated by the court. And obviously, in every criminal proceeding, you have motions hearings, you have jury selections, and you have a trial. Most people think that that would be a critical stage of the proceeding. A critical stage of prosecution includes every instance in which the advice of counsel is necessary to ensure a defendant's right to a fair trial, or in which the absence of counsel might impair the preparation or presentation of a defense. So what does this really mean? What it really means is you should have your client at every court appearance where the judge is going to be present. And at every court appearance, the judge is going to be present. It just makes no sense not to have your client there. When you have the attorney making representations as to continuation of a trial date, waiver of speedy trial, those types of things can often happen at a moment's notice. And for a client to make sure that they truly understand, it's always good for the judge to engage in a brief exchange, a brief colloquy between the defendant and the court, asking to make sure whether the defendant understands what they're doing and that it's a knowing voluntary waiver. When the client is not there, and some courts will allow a defendant not to appear for some administrative type matters, always a bad decision. And frankly, most clients want to be at every court appearance, particularly when their liberty is at stake, i.e. they're really going to go to prison for a long time, because they want to know what's going on. And what better way to get a new trial down the road is when the client can say, well, that may be what took place in court, but that's not what my attorney told me. If they're there, there's no issue. We know the judge in the Lori Vallow and Chad DeBell matters have set the matter for a hearing on Wednesday. We'll bring it to you live. I like that Judge Boyce is going to hopefully put his foot down on these scheduling matters, and Mr. Means will stop acting like everything is the most outrageous thing that's ever taken place in the world. I think he needs to stop being so offended. But hopefully Judge Boyce will also say, you can have your client here as well, so that we make sure they're understanding all of the proceedings. I wouldn't do it, just not good advice when you're dealing in an important case where someone's liberty is at stake and not having the client show up for court. We're not talking about a traffic ticket here, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about a felony. All right, let's take a quick recess. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, a bit of a time warp. That's right. A woman faced felony charges for not returning a VHS tape. Now, for the younger people out there, a VHS tape is something that they would put movies on. And you couldn't just download it to your phone. You couldn't just download it from your cable provider. You actually had to go to a store and rent it. And sometimes, if it was really popular, you couldn't get it that night when you wanted it. I know. Can you imagine such a thing these days? That's right. It's a real deal. And these videos, oftentimes referred to as going to Blockbuster, were put on VHS tapes. Well, a Texas woman recently learned that she was charged with a felony after not returning a VHS tape over 20 years ago. Karen McBride, a former Oklahoma resident, faced a felony embezzlement charge for not returning Sabrina the Teenage Witch to the movie rental store back in Norman, Oklahoma, in 1999. Now, McBride told a television station that she learned about the charges when she was in Cleveland County after trying to change her name following her marriage in Texas. She thought that she was actually going to have a heart attack. They told me that there was an issue in Oklahoma, and they gave me a number to call, and they said that I was a wanted felon. Well, Miss McBride proceeded to hopefully get this matter wrapped up. District attorney finally dismissed the charges, but that active felony warrant had gone on for years. And how did it affect Miss McBride? She believes that it affected employment over the years because this would show up on a criminal background check, and then they would let her go. It just shows, ladies and gentlemen, you need to check things out. And in today's world, there could be false information. Clearly, Ms. McBride didn't recall this tape. In fact, she says that her roommate was more likely would have rented this than she was, but it was probably under her name. Now, I'm not saying everybody's going to have a felony conviction out there, but when you go to crimetalksearch.com, you can also run your name and see if there's something out there that maybe negatively affects you. The small fee that you pay to do unlimited searches is enough that's going to pay for itself to, one, give you the peace of mind, as well as to see if there's something else out there. And as always, you can go back and search other people that you're curious about to see what they aren't telling you. All right. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant winner from last week, as well as our dumb criminal contestant of the day today. Last week, our overwhelming winner was Robert Chapman, the man who bragged on the dating site that he was storming the Capitol, and that apparently he thought this was quite the aphrodisiac to the ladies. Well, it turned out getting him arrested. Robert Chapman, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the week. We will go to crimetalksearch.com, get a good address for you, and mail you some Crime Talk swag. That's right, it's on the way. Now remember, as always, if you would like Crime Talk swag, you don't have to become a dumb criminal contestant of the week. I mean, don't get me wrong, it could be fun, could a little publicity, your 15 seconds of fame, but the reality is all you have to do is hit the link below and get all that cool gear. Now, our dumb criminal contestant of the day, Keith Adams, arrested early Saturday morning during a traffic stop. But like all things in life, there's an easy way and there's a hard way, and most people always pick the hard way. Now, Mr. Adams was a passenger in this vehicle and was sitting atop a glass pipe, which contained a thick white residue, which ultimately tested positive for cocaine. Obviously, that's a controlled substance, and Mr. Adams was taken into custody. Well, Mr. Adams also has a prosthetic leg, and guess what? That's right. The sheriffs even asked him, hey, you don't have anything in the leg, do you, that you shouldn't have? Mr. Adams, being the cool cat that he was, maybe coming down off a little cocaine, maybe he was a little, who knows? He thought he could get away with it. That's right. They searched the leg. They searched the prosthetic leg. And in the leg, they found a gram of fentanyl and a stash of Xanax pills. Now, that certainly would give a pretty nice return on investment at the county jail had it not been caught. But needless to say, now Mr. Adams has two separate charges pending: his alleged possession of meth, coke, and fentanyl, as well as the introduction of contraband. Congratulations, Keith Adams. You are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And if you keep it up, that's right, you could be a dumb criminal contestant winner of the week and win cool swag. All right, thanks for watching. Tomorrow we'll have a show. Assuming everything goes well, we should be able to do a show. And then we have our live 6 p.m. Mountain Time. Please join us. And then after that, we'll go straight into our Patreon Live, where you can call and talk to us, and we will talk, answer all your questions. Please join us. Thanks for watching today. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.